Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, December 7th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and you click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, or the words Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a place where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. That chapter of his book, Chapter 24, contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. You just click the link and download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. There's no need to put your name on a list or enter your credit card information. It is truly free. There's also a whole list of audio files you can download and listen to that contain the audio of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or they've given powerful testimonials about how the use of these tools has powerfully, positively impacted their lives. And if you choose to listen to those, I would even say repeatedly, they can serve as a tutorial for you to help you get maximum benefit from these tools in the shortest possible time. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on that, it will download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do all of that soon and often, because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they do that. And secondarily, it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. And press 1, and or you can email us. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, mindshifters-academy.org, Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment, a question, answer, or testimonial from you through the website, through the email, we will address that on the show, and then as time allows, send you a notice about when and what day and what time we were able to address your email or your comments or questions. And then you can listen back through the archives, which is another wonderful resource that's absolutely free. The archives of this show for the past almost 12 years, it'll be 12 full years by the end of January, this coming January. And the first 8 years, it was 1 hour a day, 5 days a week. And for the last almost 4 years, it's been 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. So practically every show that we've done has been recorded there. There have been a few that have been corrupted somehow through technology that may not be available. But that's another wonderful resource. And if you do send us an email with a question or a comment or a testimonial, we'll let you know what day and time that was addressed on the show, and you can listen back to your until your heart's content. So we have plenty of time today for comments and questions. Our call-in number again is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. You could make it easier for us to live into our intention with this work, which is to be of service. And we do our best to be of service, and it also gets quite a bit easier when we know what's working for you and or what's not working and or how you might prefer to proceed in a particular fashion. I realize that we are in the middle of, some would say in the throes of, going through the way of mastery in a fairly even methodical pace. And there's not a whole lot left of Lesson 31, and we were bumping up against the time limit of the show yesterday. And so what I'll do to begin today is finish the reading of Lesson 31, but there's some other things that were on my mind to talk about today. So Lesson 31 is titled Placing Your Trust and Loyalty in Love, capital L, Love. And this lesson is asking us to really pay attention to what we choose to value and to understand that when we choose to value love above everything else, we become truly free. And some of the things, the thoughts, the beliefs, the understandings that we had, the things we valued, start to shift and fade. And the things that we thought we knew for certain, we all of a sudden realize we don't know those things and or we don't value them the way we did. So to pick up where we left off yesterday, the text reads, "Well do I understand that what arises within the body-mind is a fear of survival." So I should back up a little bit to lead into that. The top of this page, 362, says, "Remember then always, beloved friends, that which crumbles, that part of your belief system that falls away, can only be form, not content, not true substance. Love, capital L, love, can never crumble because it is the content that is the presence of creation's reality. Because capital L, love, is content, it is unchangeable, unchanged, and unchanging forever. Perfect freedom comes to any mind that shifts its identity from the level of the body, from the level of the interpretive mind, from the level of the egoic mind, because the egoic mind insists that its constructs are real, correct, and valuable. But any mind that shifts away from that to become identified with love achieves perfect freedom. Perfect freedom comes to any mind that shifts its identity to be identified with the flow of life, creation itself. The text goes on and says, identity with that, with what is conditional, which with what is temporal, that can never produce what is unconditional and eternal. Because this book tells us over and over again, whatever begins in time ends in time. And you, the essence of you, your consciousness, your awareness, your soul, whatever you want to call it, existed before there was any physical universe. And it will exist after the physical universe transitions to another form of energy. So the text reads, identity with what is conditional and temporal or time-bound can never produce what is unconditional and eternal. The power of mind, your mind, can leap from the conditioned to the unconditional through the decision to place value on the unconditional, on the eternal, on the flow of life energy itself. And well do I understand that what arises within the body-mind is a fear of survival. Yet it is a useless fear, since the body-mind, from the moment of its conception, has been marching inexorably toward its demise. And if the body-mind itself is completely powerless, which it is powerless to exist as eternity, then everything dependent upon the body-mind must crumble with it. Everything, then, built as a house upon the foundation of your having become identified with the perceptual level of the body-mind, the interpretations of the thinking mind, and the insistence of the egoic mind on being right. These are all like floors in a house built on a foundation of error and illusion. You might as well own it now. They're going to crumble. Illusions have no life. That is what makes them illusions. Only reality is life, capital L life, finally found. Only in the actuality of life, in reality itself, is life finally found. Yes, you do feel that crumbling going on, for what crumbles in the mind sends a shockwave like a ripple down through the body-mind, through the brain, through the nervous system. And the body shakes and groans, and maybe it complains and cries, but it has nothing more. It is nothing more than the crumbling of illusion. Your true self, your essence, the spark of the creative mind that you are, cannot be chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way. It will definitely survive the crumbling, because this is only the crumbling of illusion. Michael Rice talks about how everything is energy and the body is energy and there is no such thing as matter. He quotes Einstein, who says what we've heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibration has been so slowed as to become perceptible to the senses. There is no matter as such. It's just energy in a different form. Dr. Michael Rice has all kinds of earlier lectures where he would talk about how if you could see the truth of what's in front of you, you wouldn't see a human body. You would see a whirling mass of protons, electrons, neutrons. He talks about those physics names for these energy packets. You'd see an energy field within an energy field within an energy field within an energy field ad infinitum, forever, expanding upward, expanding inward. you would not see what you have been trained to see as a physical being, limited and time-bound. You would see the essence of consciousness, which has manifested for a temporary time, a short period of time, a temporary communication device, which is what this book refers to as your body. The text here goes on and says, eventually the body itself must crumble as an illusion, for the mind that grows in the radiance of its awakening must finally put away the entire physical dimension as a toy outgrown. The body, mind, the nervous system can no longer contain you, for what you value is the radiance of merely being the presence of the Creator's love. You begin to realize that you do not need a body mind at all in order to extend love. While the body lasts, love it, embrace it, and allow it. Do not expect great things from it. Just use it as a temporary communication device. Since what you want is love, capital L, love, practice teaching only love. What does that mean? What is it to teach only love? At various places in this book, it's told us that to teach only love means to be only love. To teach only love means to share only your loving thoughts. And it's quick to point out, that doesn't mean you won't have fearful thoughts. It doesn't mean you won't have angry thoughts. It simply means you will not share those. You will not pour your mind energy into them. You will not value those thoughts above the thoughts of your true nature with your ability to extend the energy of creation to everyone and everything you see moment to moment. So that paragraph again reads, since what you want is love, practice teaching only love, sharing only your loving thoughts. Teaching love is not talking about love. It's not about the philosophy of love. It's not about the metaphysics of love. You teach love by being loving in each moment. You can only be loving by allowing yourself to feel the presence of love in and as your moment-to-moment experience. Because love, in this sense, capital L love, is unconditional. You are free now. No set of circumstances must change before you have the power to be in awareness of the truth of love extending through you. This is the same thing as saying that the Creator is given to you by grace in each moment and that you are asked only to open and receive it. Only love is real. Only love allows you to transcend the great fear, the great suffering that comes only from a temporary mistaken identity problem, an authority problem. You think that your construct of the world is your authority. You think the body-mind is who you really are. This is merely an identity problem, an authority problem. When you come to know that you are merely the expression of that one pure spirit, love, then you are free from the world. Now, will the world, quote, get it, close quotes? Will the world say, oh, I'm really glad that you're free? No, of course not, since the world is an attempt to be other than the truth of the kingdom. Therefore, when anyone projects upon you at any time, when anyone is in any way anything but loving, it can only be because they are still choosing to insist on the rightness of their construct of the sensory data that has come through their nervous system with which they have become identified. In other words, they are living in illusion. Only love, only the energy of creation as it extends and flows is truly real. If you want to be one who is sane and awake, be only with one who chooses to teach only love. Let those be your friends. Let those be your playmates. Let those be your lovers and spouses, for only they are capable of honoring the truth, capital T truth, that is true always, and seeing it as the very essence of your soul. That is why there is a great attraction to anyone who is awake, for they truly see you. They see you to your essence because they see from their own essence. These two are but one and the same, for the holy offspring of creation is one thing. Therefore, choose love and transcend the suffering that is the world. The next section is titled, Review Where You Have Placed Your Loyalty. Look well then, beloved friends, over the next 30 days. Enjoy merely looking at where you have placed your loyalty in the past and where you are placing it now. Look at the grand journey you have made. What on earth has changed your loyalty from teddy bear to creation itself, if not creation itself? Think not then that you have been apart from all of creation, from that one. For in each moment of your experience, even as you have believed the illusions that your body's eyes would show you, already that one who is but love was working to dissolve your illusions, one by one, in the way unique to the dynamics of your own soul. When the ship sails into the harbor, it is home. The long journey is forgotten. Perhaps there will be a few stories told in the pub as everyone has a beer. But in a day or two, a week or a month, the journey fades from awareness. And friends merely abide together, growing flowers, dancing in the evenings, observing the sunset, and giving hugs and kisses. When the ship sails into the harbor, the journey is over, and there is only calm water, though around it the storm may rage. Let it rage. Let the storm of life rage. Merely identify with the peace beyond all understanding, the peace that comes as a mind comes to choose only identity with love. Peace, beloved friends, is the result of the shift of identity, which emerges by placing your trust and loyalty only in that one who is only love. Allow then everything else to crumble. Does it mean that you must give up your golden coins? Of course not. For that would be to say that the golden coins have a power to bind you. They do not. Neither the having of them or the lack thereof can bind you. Only your decision not to love can bind you and make you suffer. Give then perfect freedom to all created things, for they belong not to you, nor were they given to you to give you security or to boost your ego or to make you happy. They're given to you for enjoyment and for you to bless. For the Christ who walks this earth knows that his or her primary purpose is to bless the Creator's creations, to set all things free in the sanctity of their own deep and perfect union with the Creator. Seek to possess nothing or no one. Seek to change nothing and no one. Seek only to love, to be love. And in being love, you are set free. So then as you conclude this lesson, simply make the decision to spend 5 minutes doing nothing but loving all that you see through the body's eyes, all that you notice arising in the mind as a memory or an image of a friend or what have you, maybe an event, any event that has occurred. Simply decide to extend love to it. That's all. Then try to tell yourself that peace is a long way off. It is a present every It is present in every moment where you decide for love. Therefore, indeed, with perfect trust and perfect loyalty, I look upon you and already know that you are born on the wings of that love that carries you away to itself. In perfect trust and loyalty, I look upon the holy and only begotten offspring of creation and know that the dream of separation has already been corrected, and you abide in perfect safety now. For the event of time and space can never touch or alter the spirit, capital S spirit, the pure intelligence, the infinite awareness that is the truth of who you are. It is up to you to decide to enjoy that power of awareness by selecting and valuing and sharing only loving thoughts. Peace, beloved friends, be with you always. Amen. Now, as I was reading that, I heard the voices of dozens of people that I've worked with over the years railing. How could you say, just love everything that is? How could you say, just extend love in every situation? This is horrible. That's horrible. This should change. That should change. There's proof that this is bad and wrong. There's proof that this is better than that. And I don't know what to tell you other than that's not what this teaching suggests. And if you try doing what this teaching suggests and you don't like the results you get, you're free to change it in the next moment. So it is perfectly safe to extend your awareness of your true nature as love to everyone and every interaction you experience in this life. It may not seem safe. You might have, as it mentioned in the reading, the part we just did, you will probably have thoughts come charging forward that say, I need to survive. This is a threat to my very survival. I can't do that. I need to fend off this and fend off that and fight for the golden coins, etc. And yet, the invitation in this work is, give it a try. See what happens when you shift the focus of what you value from what the world tells you is important over to your awareness of your true nature as love. Watch what happens. You know, I was recently listening back to a Mary Morrissey course I took years ago, and it's called Prosperity Plus, A New Way of Living. And in the very beginning of that course, they talk about this is going to be a 10-week course, and we're going to invite everybody who attends this course to engage with us in a 10-week experiment. So, you know, think about it. You're just playing with these concepts and ideas for 10 weeks. You don't necessarily have to commit to do this for the rest of your life. You don't have to pledge allegiance to some flag. You don't have to give up any concepts you have of who or what God is or what you should be doing. And yet you can play with You can try this on. You can do this as a practice for 10 weeks. And that's what comes to mind as I'm reading these last few lessons, 29, 30, and 31. Because some of what is being suggested here is so radically different than what most of us have been conditioned to think and do, that I hear, literally am hearing in my own mind, in the voices of various people, some who are on the call right now, I hear the pushback. And this teaching itself says, we know there's going to be pushback. We know how the mind has been programmed. So play with it. Watch it. Explore the pushback of the mind. Welcome it. Explore in your own mind its true nature. Where does it come from? Was I born believing what I believe about life, about the need for money, about religion, about politics? Was I born with any of that hardwired into me the way a salmon is hardwired to grow and then swim, you know, hundreds if not thousands of miles away, and then when it's time to spawn the next year or two or three, swim back up that, up against the stream to where it was spawned and then lay eggs and die? Is that, do I have all of that wired into me? Is my thought about life, is my belief about money, is my belief about time, is my belief about religion something that's just rock solid and true and I can know it just the way I know gravity because I experience it moment to moment? Or is it something that was programmed into me? Is it something that I developed on my own based on programming that was put into me? In this book, they call it the trivialities that have been shoved into the intellect. And they also point out to us that most of us have been raised and taught in a language that is based on separation. It's based on explicitly on physical perception. Not like how the Mayan calendar lecture talks about how they were in that culture, not that they were any better, but they were different in that they had calendars that tracked things other than just the physical movement of our planet around the physical structure of the sun. They understood that. They had a calendar for that. But they had several other calendars that were much more important in the person's and the culture's day-to-day life. That calendar that tracked only the physical movement of our physical planet around the physical structure of the sun, that was only used to collect taxes because the turning of the seasons, when the crops came in, etc. But the other calendars they had were tracking what they considered to be personal energies and universal energies and the flow of life and creation. But we're all taught languages that are based in the language of the physical and the separation that are our perception would show us if we rely just on what the, we'll call them the physical senses and the input we get from them. They seem to show us that we are separate from everyone and everything around us. They seem to show us that we have a physical body and that we are not an energy system. And so the languages that we're taught are built on that. And that informs or basically constructs our perception, which we know, and we've been talking about and studying, is highly fallible. It is extraordinarily limited. It is unique to each individual, and it's not something that we passively receive from the world around us. Our perception is something that we actively create based on our past, based on what's been programmed into us. So what have you been taught to believe about time? What have you been taught to believe about money? What have you been taught to believe about physical survival? What have you been taught to believe about your true nature? What have you been taught to believe about religion and baptism? And these last few lessons are asking us to question that and play with it. I was recently finishing up the book by Gay Hendricks called The Big Leap. And in it, he challenges the readers to question what they've been taught about time and the Newtonian concept of time. And he challenges whoever reads that book to step into the Einstein understanding of time, and to understand that time is created through thought. And so when you think you don't have any time, you have the experience of not having any time. And when you think there's plenty of time, you create more time. Now it sounds absolutely insane. But it only sounds insane because we've been trained to think that something else is true. But quantum physics sounds insane to somebody who's only ever heard about Newtonian physics. And yet without quantum physics and the knowledge of the energy systems that we call physical, without that knowledge we wouldn't have cell phones, we wouldn't have satellites, we wouldn't have pictures of the world from space. So there's a level at which we can demonstrate to ourselves that much of what we've been taught to believe about space and time is not all there is. It may not be completely false, but it's certainly not the only actuality that exists. So it isn't that much of a stretch to do what this book is asking us to do these last few lessons. Take a really good long look at what you're spending your time and mind energy and your thoughts valuing. And then notice, from a previous lesson it said, just notice how it feels inside of you when you go into judgment. Step outside of the logical weighing all of the logistics and values of weight and money and time. Step outside of that and just notice what's the feeling state when you're in judgment, when you think you're right and someone else is wrong. And the invitation here is to play with that, experiment with it, and watch what you prefer without needing to jump into, oh, this is what's right. Oh, what I thought before was wrong. You know, if you go back to this, one of the things I particularly love about these last few sessions is they say, just watch this stuff. Just watch how quickly you want to judge right or wrong, good or bad. But here right near the end of this last lesson, it says, just look at it like a journey. Just chuckle at it. Just, and, oh my gosh, I used to think this and I used to think that. Just enjoy looking back over where you've traveled and what you've done and the people you've interacted with and the life events you've lived through. Look at where you have placed your loyalty in the past and look at where you're placing it now. Look at it. Label it a grand journey that you've made. Understand you've never been apart from your Creator. All of these things you've gone through, they're just a trip. It's just an excursion. It's just a play. It's a soul at play in the universe. You know, it says when the ship sails into the harbor, the journey's over. We might tell some stories about what was happening days, weeks, months, years, or decades ago, but after a while, a day or two or a week or a month, the journey fades from awareness. What's more important is merely abiding together in the moment, doing life without the judgment in the moment, extending love, tapping into the awareness of your true nature as a miracle of life expressing in form. Merely experiment with identifying with the peace beyond all understanding. That peace will come to you as you choose to identify only with your loving thoughts. You identify with the truth that is true always, that you didn't create yourself and you don't know when you were created. You have no idea what your brother or sister needs. You don't know what anything is or is for. And yet, this is an amazing experience you're having with each breath that you get to take. With every move you make, someone will be watching you. Thank you, Sting. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. We've got about 17 or 18 minutes left. How crazy is it to think about questioning everything you've ever thought, everything you've given value to, including what you think about time and whether or not you think you have enough time? You know, we've had it happen on the show several times in the past. It probably goes back almost 12 years now, but 8 and 10 and 12 years ago, we would routinely have people call in, and the primary focus would be the worksheets. And how do you do a worksheet, and what should I use it for? And somebody would say, well, why don't you do, you know, 2 or 3 or 5 worksheets a day? And the person would say, oh, I just don't have time for that. And the absolutely pinnacle story about that is that a gentleman named Rex and Michelle went into a high-security prison in Ionia, Michigan. I believe I said that name correctly. And they went in there to teach this work, Dr. Michael Rice's work, and to teach a course of whether it was laws of living or the why again, you know, why is this happening to me again, and to teach the inmates who are going to be there for like many, many years to life in prison about the forgiveness process, about the reality management worksheet and the targeted journaling tool that Michael calls Mind Shifters. And as they went in there and they did the first course and they taught people about the worksheets, they said, you know, there's a possibility we might do the second course. But if you want to go in the second course, the price of admission is you have to do 5 worksheets a day for however many days. Now, these are people who are locked in a prison cell for all but 1 or 2 hours every day. And to a person, when they did not do their worksheets, their response was, I didn't have the time. So we would routinely talk with people about how, if you say, I'll try and find the time for that, we would let them know that will never happen. You won't find the time. Like you might be walking down a forest preserve trail and you find a snake in the middle of the trail, or you find a broken branch just there that you notice, You are not going to go about living your life and all of a sudden find an extra 5 hours, an extra hour a day, an extra 10 hours in a week. And yet, you could choose to make the time to do whatever it is you want to do. Go ride a bike, go for a walk, do a worksheet, do a targeted journaling process. How is it that we make time for what we value? How is it that we are not aware? We're trained to think that we are not choosing, that we don't have choice. I must do this and I must do that. These last few lessons are calling us to question that, to observe it for ourselves and to understand we are choosing our experience of life moment to moment. We're choosing what we pour our mind energy into. We're choosing how we spend our time. And Gay Hendricks would have us wake up to the fact that we're choosing to think about time from a Newtonian perspective, which means there's always a shortage of time and there's way too much more that I need to do that I'll never have time to do it, rather than from the Einsteinian perspective, which says the human mind created the concept of time, and without thought, there is no time. There's just the flow of life. And as you create a belief that you do not have time for this or that, that becomes your experience. Now, the wisdom of this is woven into lots of great spiritual teachings. Guy Finley has had a number of talks I've listened to him give over the years where he talks about, what are you doing when you're hurrying? Where do you think you're going? Why do you ever hurry and rush? And what are you accomplishing or what are you failing to accomplish when you think of that as critically important? And then you get yourself all tight and all tense and you create this very powerful experience. What are you doing? Why are you rushing? Where are you going? What is it that you think is so important that it's not going to be there when you get there? How is it that you've created a belief system that says it's really important that you make yourself all tight and tense and physically miserable? It's the same wisdom as what Gay Hendricks has in his book, where he encourages us to recognize we create our experience of time. And, you know, Gay Hendricks is talking about how if you have somebody in your life that you truly cherish, you just really enjoy spending time with this person, when you get to spend time with them, if you get to spend an hour with them, it seems to go by in a minute. Now compare that to how it would feel to spend 1 minute with your hand on a hot stove. It would seem like an hour or longer. So when we're going through something we don't want, we create an experience of life, of time dragging, taking forever. And when we're blessed to be able to enjoy something deeply, we create the experience of time flying and actually stealing something from us because we want this moment or this experience to last longer. So the invitation is to play with these concepts, to understand that as it begins telling us in the first lesson in this work, we are always choosing our experience of life, and we're doing it by how we choose to focus our mind energy and then interpret life according to the mind energy that we're focusing on, the interpretation that we've chosen. The way I've written it in summary is you have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. This is a truth. You can observe it for yourself. The second part of that is, it is the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment, which is the mechanism that creates your experience of life. So you are a very powerful creator. You are creating your experience of life moment to moment by how you choose to focus your conscious awareness, where you choose to focus it. And that's what these last few lessons are bringing us to, inviting us to question, to observe, what is it that we truly value? What is it that we have decided is so important that we're going to spend vast amounts of our mind energy and our day-to-day time focusing on this, or lamenting that it's not there anymore, or fighting and struggling to try and keep conditions in place so we don't have to experience being without it? Just an invitation, just a dance you can do, just a series of observations you can make, just an experiment you can choose to engage in. Just like the Prosperity Plus says, okay, here's a 10-week experiment. We're going to try and introduce you to how the laws of living, the way Michael Rice talks about them, the universal laws about how the mind energy works, emotions work, the physical energy system works, they're just laws. You don't get to break a law. You can try to act as though it isn't in effect, and you will have some disruption in your life. But a true law is not something that gets broken. A true law is something that just functions. It's like gravity, the law of momentum. They just function that way. So there, you know, there's a tremendous wisdom that says, don't confuse law with these ordinances, these written rules that man passes and law enforcement agencies try to uphold, etc. When something is a law, it just functions the way it functions. The actuality is, if you change how you think about time, your experience of time will change. If you understand that you are the one creating your experience of time, and every time you hurry and struggle and make yourself worry about getting someplace, and every time you do that, you're the one creating your experience of time. And if you change the way you think about it and value it and question it, you will change your experience. You will understand that you have more time than you ever imagined. And you'll start to recognize how you're using the time, your thoughts about time, to create a sense that you don't have enough time. In the book, he recommends just begin by being more honest about it. Go put yourself in a however many week, a week, a 2 week, a 10 week, it doesn't matter. Put yourself in an experiment where you try to eliminate any negative statement about time and watch what happens. Watch how often you have to catch yourself and correct yourself. If somebody comes and asks you to do something and you say, I'm sorry, I just don't have the time, you catch that thought and you don't say it that way. It doesn't mean you say yes to everything everybody asks you to do. It just means you don't make the excuse that you're not going to do it because there's no time. Because the fact of the matter is, if you don't do something, it's because you're choosing to do something else. That you're choosing to spend your time doing something else. It's like the inmates in the high security prison. They had more than enough time to do 5 worksheets a day. They were in a prison cell for 22 or 21 hours every day. They had plenty of time to do the worksheets. They chose to spend that time doing something else. And they would create an experience of not having enough time. That's what they experienced. They're very busy. They're overwhelmed. Does that mean there was not enough time? Does that mean they were lying? No. It just means they were creating an experience. And that's to the point of this work. Each and every one of us is creating our experience of life that includes our experience of time. And when we wake up and start observing that, all kinds of options open up to us that we previously had never even considered a possibility. So, here's hoping this is making sense. Here's hoping that for those of you who are feeling adventurous, you'll start doing what the last few lessons have asked us to do. Evaluate. What is it we truly value? Where are we spending our time? How are we creating a sense of time? How are we creating a sense that we don't have enough time? Or that we got so much time on our hands that we're bored? Either one is a creation of our thought process. It's a creation of where we choose to focus our mind energy. And the invitation with this work and the invitation with books like The Big Leap from Gay Hendricks are start questioning it. See it, engage it playfully. Get curious about what you're doing to create your experience of life, good, bad, and otherwise. It's my understanding that Michael and Jeannie will be back today, so the second hour will be live as well. We've got about 3 minutes left before we roll over into our second hour. I was thinking about the support group, but we don't have one tonight. We have one again tomorrow night. We had a group last night, and it ended up being just discussion among the members, and we will have another one tomorrow. All of the information you might need to join us there is available at mindshiftersacademy.org website. If you join us or you send someone else to join us, please let them know there's a separate login information page for Tuesdays and a separate one for Thursdays. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff that we call love. We actually are love. You literally are a miracle of the creative energy expressing in form. And everything else you think about or create an experience of in your life is false. The truth of you has never been chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way. You've never, and that's one of the core things in this work, is to say, you've never succeeded in separating yourself from your source, from God, from light, from love, from every other human being. We do have the ability to create an experience of being separate, but that is an illusion. And what we want to do with this work is awaken from the illusion. Dr. Rice talks about transcending, not being to transcend something in the way we think of, but to end the trance, to awaken from the illusion. And what that means is to have a slightly different and yet subtle but powerfully different experience of the truth of your life. So, welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim.
Welcome back. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. Thank you. I appreciate it. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Wednesday, December the 7th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. While I'm waiting on Michael to dial in, we did have an awesome time. We went to a place called Hot Springs, North Carolina, which is only about an hour and 45 minutes from where we are here in Bristol. I didn't even know we had hot springs around here. And we had very sporadic Wi-Fi and zero cell signal, so any calls we made we had to do over the Wi-Fi. And but anyway, it was a lot of fun. We did a lot of soaking. We actually, the hot springs pumped right into our bathtub in our room, so we soaked about 7 times over the 2-day period, over an hour each time. So it was really nice. It was relaxing, and it's a really small town. It's got like 2 restaurants owned by the same company, but we just really enjoyed being there. And hold on 1 second, and I'll see if Michael's having trouble getting in, and we do already have a hand up. He is coming up and dialing in, and I'm going to go ahead and turn Doug's phone on because I know we were expecting to talk to him. Welcome, Doug. How are you doing?
Hey, good afternoon.
Yeah.
I'm good. I'm fine.
Good. So Michael is dialing in here, and he was preoccupied with Aria for a second. She was wanting something. So anyway, he's dialing in. Give him just 1 minute. And I hope you're getting ready for your holiday festivities.
Yes, I am. I am running around getting ready to leave here. I'm going out to my sister's moms and nieces. Yep, they got some work for me to do with taking care of the dogs and my mom for a while. My sister and my niece go to do a marathon in Hawaii, and then.
Oh my goodness, that sounds like fun!
Yeah.
I think I'd go with them.
Yeah, I'm gonna stay and take care of the dogs and my mom, but then after that, they're gonna leave my niece, and I'm gonna go for a few days. So.
Oh,
that'll
good.
Be
good.
Hello.
Good.
All
righty. Well, I think Michael's with us.
Great.
Hey there, good sir.
Howdy.
How do you be?
Hello.
Hey. How are you?
Yeah. Alive, well, and working on becoming more of awareness of the love that I am all the time. Yeah. Working on that. So,
awesome. So how has the work been unfolding? What's been opening for you or what's been happening since our conversation on Friday?
I find it's just amazing, really, what, you know, these things that get revealed, like the psychological effects of emotional suppression thoughts that you told me to look at. They're just so, it's like, is somebody writing this for me? You know?
Yeah, it's like we're different? No.
Right. Yeah.
No, that chart
amazing.
Was written, I don't even know, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Maybe longer. Actually, that chart goes way back into antiquity with it's a chart that comes out of naturopathic medicine, the system of medicine I'm trained in. And then the thought disorders that go with it is something that I injected in it to get more specific as to what kind of thought disorders are pretty much running the culture. I mean, it's the foundation of
right.
The whole culture.
Yes, and you know, I one of the things that I'm struggling with separately is just my own emotions about what I see happening in the world every day, and with the World Economic Forum and, you know, lockdowns and stealing farmers' property and all kinds of crazy things. And as I go through all these things, it's so obvious how exactly what you said is true. The whole world is being run by this stuff, and it's just, God, it would be so much a more paradise if we could get this stuff healed in everybody, in ourselves, starting with me. You know, it's like I gotta.
Well, if you think about it now, you're saying all those things you see happening in the world, and you go give a bunch of descriptors. Where are you seeing those things?
When I look at news, when I look at more specific inquiries, people who are looking at it, then I could go into specifics like, you know, redacted on YouTube or, you know, something like that. But generally, it's almost everywhere that I look, as I look at the world, what I hear and see about the world, news and media, sources, research that's being done, journalism, people who are concerned about these things. And I see that. At least that's what I perceive when I look at what's happening, is how these, I don't want to divert too much into that unless you want to, but how these policies that are being put in force are so destructive to humanity and to our prosperity and to the well-being of the planet. It's very, very disconcerting.
Okay, let's back up a step. When I say specifically, where are you seeing these things?
Well, in my perceptual awareness,
you have a
picture.
You have a picture that shows you these things, and
right.
Where is that picture coming from?
Well,
like, do you think? Let me share a story.
Okay.
Back a few weeks ago, Aria wanted to watch a video on the body. She's really into anatomy and physiology. And so she was actually making some body parts, intestines and liver and such, out of Play-Doh to put in her, you know, model of the body that we call Mr. Skinny, where you can take the organs out and put them back in. Well, she makes them out of Play-Doh. She said, "Papa, I want to watch that body video on YouTube." I said, "Okay." So we went and watched it. And it starts out, and it has this outline of a human form with all the organs in it. It's a kid's video on anatomy and physiology. And all of the organs fall out of the body in order of size. And then they sing what their part is in the body. And when the eyes come up to sing, the eyes sing, "I am your eyes, I am your eyes, I see the world around you." And Aria looked at me and she said, "Papa, they don't understand. We don't see with our eyes, we see with our brain."
Right. Yes, it is my perceptual experience of, which is right.
It's a perceptual construct of your mind. And of course, if the device through which you are looking holds a particular form of darkness. It was somebody, I think, what was his name? Saul or Paul or something like that a couple thousand years ago that said, "We see as though through a glass darkly." If there's a darkness in the glass through which we see, then obviously everywhere we look, we would see that darkness. Isn't that what you said? You see it everywhere?
Well, I see it in, I couldn't be more specific. I see it in the globalist agenda that's being pushed upon the planet. That's how, where I see it. I don't see it everywhere. I see a lot of good things going on, too, in the world. But
so,
I get the point that inside of me.
Yeah, you say I see it in the globalist agenda, but I don't know where you find the globalist agenda unless you think you're looking with your eyes and you get your brain to generate a picture.
This is an area, Michael, that has long sort of confused me or been something that I don't understand enough. I mean, I get 100% that everything that I, quote, see is an internally generated image that created out of brain cells firing that is in response to the stimulus that's coming into my senses that's causing nerve impulses.
Right.
I get that very, very clearly.
Okay.
But where I have difficulty is that it seems to me that at some point you have to say, okay, Hitler's extermination of the Jews is a bad idea. I have to go to what I see as
right.
the basis of love,
mm-hmm.
and I have to make an assessment, and I see Hitler, you know, if I were there back then, seeing him load Jews onto freight trains and haul them off and gas,
right.
I would say that's a bad thing for the world. That's not good. Okay, so if I see 3,000 farms in the Netherlands being taken over because, quote, they're not green enough for the EU World Economic Forum's agenda, I look at that and I say that's going to cause mass starvation by and by. That country is the second world's largest exporter of food. This is insanity, that the mind that is driving this process is off the mark. And so I'm making an assessment, but all of that's happening inside my perceptual world, and it's like sometimes I get confused between how do I make assessments and react to the world if I'm saying, well, all that's just an internal reality and has, you know, I could sit back and be in bliss, but in the meantime, me and everybody else is going to starve or be put in prison or be taken to the gas chambers or whatever the insane mind that's driving the world that's coming out of the power person dynamic that we're talking about is suggesting and enforcing upon the people of the planet who are submitting to that. So I guess my question there is, how do I...
What's happening with your breath?
I just see this. Well, it's stopping.
So my offering, Doug, is... My offering is... that while your mind is producing those constructs based in what sounds like fear, tinged with maybe a little bit of hostility, you couldn't be in bliss if you wanted to be.
Not in that moment in my mind.
That's a lie you're telling yourself. And notice that the mind will take one of its constructs and it'll go to the very extreme position to try to prove that it must be out there. And my offering is that until I can stand connected to that space of love and vote energetically to keep I am a vote.
A vote, okay.
Election,
okay.
Vote. I am a vote energetically that helps to maintain that very thing that I rage against. And so my take is...
I can't dispute that.
Let's,
but
right.
Okay. But I... It still leaves me with the question of how do we act then and how do we decide what to act? I mean, when I look at your Facebook page on occasion about your views about certain leaders and certain activities going on.
Insanity going.
Yeah, and so I see that. So are you saying that I can see that, recognize it, understand it for what it is, discern it, and simply maintain tranquility inside my own being, and that's the goal?
When you can do that, it's been called equanimity. When you can do that, then you're an energetic vote to take things in a different direction.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if you've noticed, like, to me right now, I mean, there's a certain guy who just said we should throw the Constitution out and make him the president. And to me, it's the ultimate of insanity. It's the ultimate of pain. I wouldn't want to be in that guy's body. It's got to be a horrific place to be. And once in a while, actually it's been a while, if you look back through my Facebook pages, you'll see there's a particular picture that I post of him with his son. And it's a really sweet picture where he's hugging his son. And I invite everyone to focus and shift into love and send it in his direction, because as long as one of us or a group of us stand as rage or hatred or vengeance or whatever of a particular behavior, we just got trapped in supporting that behavior. But when I can come back inside myself and realize that the reason I'm in pain, whether that pain takes the form of anger or rage or fear or sadness or grief or loss, if I'm in pain, there's an energy in me that I need to resolve. And because I am an energy device, the energies that I hold amplifiers for, like pain or fear, I'm an energetic contributor to that very thing that I say I hate. You know, Job gave us a really good insight when he said, that which I feared most has come upon me. Fear is the amplifier that extends the energy, literally, that supports the thing that I say that I hate or I'm afraid of. What I'm saying is that if my perception, you know, there's a wonderful section in the Course in Miracles that says, perception is a skill made up by you to take the place of what the Creator gave us in creation. So we have this construct, this little tiny, you know, trillions of bits of data surrounding us, measured electrical frequencies in the mind, 10,000 bits of information firing. My mind creates a 9-bit construct, a picture that I think is out there, but is actually generated by my brain. And underlying it is all this energy of support for exactly that when I'm in hate or fear or rage or guilt about it. And so the basic idea is, can I process out every energetic vote in me that supports that and bring to bear the energy of active present love that heals that? And can I inspire other people to do that so together we get to a place where the energy system shifts? You know, my background's in electronics. And you probably remember having your radio on and you're going to work in the morning and you listen to your favorite, you know, radio station, and you're driving along, you're on the AM radio, and you're driving along, and you're listening to your favorite rock and roll music or whatever it is, and there was a certain corner you'd get to every morning on the way to the office that all of a sudden that station would shift. It was still tuned exactly the same way, but you weren't listening to your favorite rock and roll music. You were listening to a symphony. It's like, what happened? Nobody touched the radio. All that happened was a shift into a field that was weaker regarding the expression that was coming out of the radio, where that field weakened, and another field came in and strengthened. And all of a sudden, the whole manifestation changed from my favorite rock and roll station to this, symphony that I hate to listen to. So there was a point where an energy shift occurred. In physics, the thing that causes that energy shift to occur is called critical mass. This man, Yeshua, 2,000 years ago, who knew how it was that we created, and he said, there'll come a time when the whole world will be fooled. If we're fooled into thinking that out there is independent of us, but we give it an energetic vote, then we're participants in it. When I take back the energy in me that goes rage, fear about that, I've taken back the energetic vote, and that expression weakens. And everybody involved in that expression has their field weakened regarding it. And when enough people withdraw their vote, whether their vote is, hey, I'm with that terrible event and I'm helping it and I'm going to do my best, or I hate that terrible event and I'm going to fight it to the death, we're supporting it. That's how the creative process works. What's in me that I need to process through that's happened to me over and over and over and over again in my personal life, but I can take my mind to the extreme event and see it happening out there and say, yeah, see, it really is real out there. I'm not saying it's not happening. I'm not saying it's not real. I'm saying it's a creation. And everybody that gets conned into energetically supporting it is maintaining it, even with their hate of it. Does that make sense?
Well, it certainly does. And I yes. You know, and
so I don't
I
know at what point. I don't know at what
I
point.
I join with you. Go ahead.
I don't know at what point the energy field of that horrific happening becomes weak enough that everybody who's participating in it all of a sudden turns their energy in another direction because the energy just isn't there for them anymore and the whole thing falls apart. I don't know at what point, you know, we get to that corner where the station shifts to a different channel, to a different expression. So if I have some form of hostility or fear about anything, if I will bring it back into my personal world and clean it up, whether it's about what my brother did or my sister did or my spouse did or my girlfriend did or my past girlfriend did or my mother did or my father, if I can bring it back in me and clean that out, then I literally weaken the broadcast station, so to speak, that supports the extremes of it. Because we're not independent of the creation. We're part of it. In fact, we're so much a part of it that Einstein said, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. Our brain creates these pictures that keep us trapped, fooled into thinking that's independent of us. And when we keep bringing it back to, this is what's moving in me and this is the work I need to do today. And that work is usually done locally. Very much like the activists say, you know, think globally, act locally. Well, you can't get much more local than I handle my own fear, my own rage, my own guilt, my own grief, my own loss, my own belief in poverty, whatever it happens to be, whether it's poverty of money or poverty of relationship or, you know, satisfaction or whatever arena it's in. When I act locally, when I change the dynamics inside of this broadcast station, then I, one, withdraw my energy that keeps that field over there lighted up and everybody looking at it and being attracted to it. And when I shift it to a different field, then the other field gets a little stronger and a little brighter, and that one gets a little weaker. You know, there's a great scene in the Star Wars movie. I don't know if you've seen that lately, but the first of the Star Wars movie, there's a scene where the evil Lord, you know, Darth Vader finally gets Luke Skywalker into the presence of the evil Lord, and the evil Lord points and shows him a map of the galaxies. And he says, and by the way, I know where your friends are that are resisting us. And I got you here so you could watch me destroy them. And he blows up that planet. And then he taunts Luke. Says, go ahead, hate me. He laid his lightsaber right there for him. Go ahead, take the sword, kill me. If I can get you to hate me over that event out there, I got you on the dark side. Even if you kill me, it doesn't matter. I got you on the dark side. It's a brilliant piece of work to demonstrate that. So if I see that, you know, crazy happening out there, and for me, my motivation when I post, and I do post a lot of things that appear to be political, but none of my posts are political. My posts are about, I have 5 granddaughters, and I want to see a world of love and gentleness and respect for them. And so I post to educate people on holding darkness accountable, doing one's own work, and bringing love to those things, and changing the game from the place we're creators, not from the place outside of us where the appearance expresses.
Right. I think I fully join you in wanting to heal as creators what's in us that's contributing to the problem. And that's the first order of business. But at the same time, I think that and that's where my confusion, so to speak, I claim confusion, arises about that and taking some action in the meantime, you know, by way of holding darkness accountable or by way of trying to promote the understanding of what's actually happening so that people see it and recognize it for what it is instead of being blinded by it and thinking, oh, this is a good thing. You know, I see more hostility and vitriol in those who report and create a distorted context about what that man said that you mentioned than in the actual context in which those words are something similar to them were actually spoken, which I've seen both, plenty of both. And, you know, where I join you 100% is in understanding, because you've shown me this over the years, how we as internal creators, all the stuff that you've said, it's like this is gold, you know. And for me, yes, I'm stuck. I fully admit it. I have this is where my first order of business needs to be, in sorting this stuff out and in removing from me whatever it is that gets upset when I, for example, see Biden mandating vaccines upon our military. Or some other thing that I can pick, any one of a million things. I've already given several examples of things
right.
that disturb me, and then I'm confused about what to do about it.
Let's just stop right there. You just gave yourself one of the keys to why you're confused and how to clean it up.
Okay.
If I repeat your words, those things that disturb me. Those
yeah.
things that disturb me. So
yep.
let's define once again what denial is. When I think
yeah.
or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of the disturbance inside of me, then I'm in denial. When
right.
I go into denial, in order to hold a construct that out there is what disturbs in here, I have to take the truth of what's disturbing in here and dissociate from it, hide it from myself. I literally
yep.
have to put it in a file in the computer of my mind, and I put a password on it, and then I burn the password, never to be remembered. And so now I've dissociated from the vote energetically that I hold that keeps that thing in place, the way I see it, which may not be the way it is, but the way I see it, at least the way my mind constructs it, because when I go into denial and I say that is the cause of this, the first thing that happens is I dissociate from this, and then the this that I've dissociated from that I will never see until I step into a true healing mode, this which I dissociated from that I will never see truly or accurately again is the very content of my own mind out of which I make that picture of what I think is out there. And so now what I've hidden in me is literally projected into my brain's image of whoever the them is, whether it's the Netherlands or the Bidens or the whoever it is. So now my dissociated content, I'm still in relationship with the disturbance. I still have the disturbance, but now I fully believe that it's caused by this picture in my mind, and I believe that the picture in my mind is actually out there happening. And so there's this man, Yeshua, 2,000 years ago, that said, here's how you straighten that out. You recognize that the perceptual construct that you have, which is affiliated with disturbance in me, is driven by a goal. And right. when I cancel that goal, I get to drop into direct relationship with that disturbance rather than indirect relationship by projecting to my brain's image of anything or everything else. And when you start looking underneath the surface, you'll find that it's the same disturbance that I project into my relationship with my mother or my father or my lover or my spouse or my children or my grandparents or my government or my brother or my sister or whoever. The disturbance is all the same. But I can take that and put it in my brain's image of anything that I focus on, and I'll be, as Paul said, seeing through a glass darkly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Yeshua said, here's how you clean it up. You look at, you'll notice that if the folks who are doing the stuff in the Netherlands and the folks who are doing stuff with vaccines and what have you, if all of the people that you put it on were following the goals that you held for them, notice there would be no disturbance in awareness. The only time the disturbance is felt is when you load that goal in your mind. The mistake we make is we associate the disturbance that's in us with the picture our mind is developing, and we actually believe that the picture is what's happening out there. And as long as the picture holds any form of hostility or fear, what I've just been informed of by my own mind is that my mind is using its corrupt data to produce that picture, and the picture's not true. Now, I will then, through resonance, find 1,000 or 10,000 or 1,000,000 other people who got the same dissociation, the same goal, the same disturbance, and will agree with me. See, it's out there. But the fact is, if it's not in you, if you didn't have a neural structure that supported your mind producing that quality of disturbance, you couldn't experience that quality of disturbance, even if what, you know, your mind says it's disturbed about were happening in spades right there in your front yard. You couldn't be disturbed by it. You go, whoa, there's something crazy happening in my front yard, and you'd go out and you'd be the space that if it's possible to rectify it, you'd rectify it. But you can't rectify it, you can't see it accurately, as long as you've got a neural structure in you that's producing that construct and thinking that the disturbance is about what's outside of you. And as was said in the ancient teachings, there'll come a time when the whole world will be fooled. Millions of people have been tricked about all kinds of things and come to all kinds of things with hostility or fear and don't know that they're looking at a product of the corrupt data in their own minds, whether they're looking at, you know, the spouse or the girlfriend or the boyfriend, whether they're looking at the world situation.
Well, I can, all I can say is that I fully join in the idea that the first order of business is to clear up the disturbance inside of me, so that and the sort of nuanced addition that you're giving me is that a deeper understanding of how having that disturbance, just having that disturbance, energetically contributes and votes for whatever the event is that's quote, the cause of the disturbance, which of course it isn't, the thing that I'm concerned about, whatever. And you're saying that it distorts, and this is where there's still confusion for me, distorts the ability to see what's actually happening. I mean, there is a reality out there called a vaccine mandate for the military. That's a fact.
That's a fact.
That's a fact. Okay, that's a fact. So if that's a fact, good, bad, or indifferent, or how I respond to it becomes about me first being at peace about it, and then, but still my perception of it is that, okay, it's accurate to the degree that it's a fact. It's not a delusion. I'm not deluding myself into thinking there's a vaccine mandate. It's out
and
there.
Notice, Doug, that what the mind wants to do to keep its proof going is go to the most extreme example possible, where you'll never figure it out. You know, it's like, well, if we could just figure that out. You're not going to figure it out. Again, think globally and now act locally. Locally means within your own mind, within your own perceptual construct, and come to a state of peace. And so to act locally, one of the things that I've learned, or actually, you know, I'm still learning it for myself personally, is that when there's a disturbance in my mind, the reason there's a disturbance in my mind is because there's a disturbance in my mind. And if I look at constructs of my mind through the disturbed state of my mind lies to me. It tells me things that aren't true. I mean, I don't have to know anything about. I don't have to know anything about an external circumstance to know that if hostility or fear is moving in me, that means my mind is using corrupt data to produce the picture that it sees. And you got to be clear that your eye is not a lens through which you see. You've never seen anything with your eyes. You will never see anything with your eyes. You know, you can go download, Jeannie's got a link to it on the website. There's a CIA. I mean, this is just one source of it. We've been teaching this for decades, and back probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, we came across this piece of research. The CIA did a thing on the study of human intelligence. You can download the book free from their website, or it's actually on our website now because they kept moving it around. But they do one chapter where, you know, they're trying to get the best intelligence possible out of their intelligence agents. So they study perception. And here's what they say, quote, "The mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality." So you don't have eyes to see what's happening in the world. You can't see anything with your eyes. I mean, as I said, Ari at 4 went, "Papa, they don't understand. We see with our brain, not with our eyes." And actually, our conversation this morning, you know, with her at 4 is, the other day we had a conversation about, you know, she did the eye thing all on her own. She came up with that totally by herself. She'd been listening to the radio show for years, but she just came up with that. The other day we were talking and we were relating that to, well, so we have all these antennae. Your nose is an antenna. It brings in certain energies. Your eyes bring in certain, your ears, your taste, all those things. And we actually had a great example of that. That morning we had eaten, Jeannie had found some pancake, you know, vegetarian sausage and pancake on a stick. And we'd eaten one, and I was dipping mine in mustard, and she was dipping hers in syrup. And I went, "Ew, syrup, no, mustard." And so we had a perfect thing about, so it's the brain that tastes. It's the brain that hears. It's the brain that sees. And if that device is using hostility or fear, you don't have to figure out what's going on in the external world because it's using corrupt data. So clean up the apparatus through which you're seeing And then you can get accurate data about what's going on in the world. And then you've got a stepping stone to step out into the world as the active presence of love and bring correction. Hold a space for correction rather than perception based in hostility or fear creates a resonance with 10 million people who've got the same perception based in hostility or fear. And look at that. Look at all the people supporting it. And I don't care how much action you take, you're never going to change that one.
Right.
So
yep.
Act locally. And, you know, I asked you to look up the three early memories exercise, and you actually sent me a current one that you did because you hadn't come up with one previously. So when I say act locally, what I'd invite you to do, have you got that present, that sheet that you texted me with
yes,
the three early memories?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
So our conversation on Friday was very, very local. It was about yourself and your relationship with the young lady that you've been being with, separating from, being with. That's about as local as it gets.
Yes.
And if you looked at the three early memories sheet without, and I'll invite you to go ahead and do the whole exercise, is I'd invite you to take that situation, that local situation, and look at the bottom line of those three early memories. And if you looked at life is, like for instance, I'm looking at the first one, and life is dangerous. Does
right.
that apply to, if you were to fill in a blank for, you know, the stuff happening in the Netherlands at the farms and or what you see with the mandate for vaccines, would that word dangerous be applicable?
Perfectly. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then if you were to put in, I'm looking at the second line, I'm defective. And would that word fit in your part in correcting that whole situation? As in, there's nothing I can do about it? If I were really empowered, I'd change this whole thing right now?
Well, I guess, I mean, powerless or defective, yeah, to do something about it. Right. I would say yes. I think I would have to say yes to that.
People are challenged. Relationships scary. I've got to do better. I've got to be better.
Right. And that's what I was seeing, too, through doing all of this. It's just like exactly, you know, exactly the
pattern. I want safety. So the idea of that, and if you went through each of those three elements, if you remember when we do that exercise live, and you might want to go back to the codependence intensive and do the codependence, or pardon me, the three early memories worksheet, just follow through the instructions and write it out again. And then you'll remember what we do is we say, okay, so take the things that are common from these three early memories and put them on another sheet. It's called When I Heal. And so that would look like when I heal, life is going to look dangerous. I'm going to feel like I'm defective. I'll be depressed and challenged. I'll think that, you know, what's going on with the world, my relationship with the world is scary, and I've got to be better. I've got to do better. I really want safety, or I'm just going to get out of here. If you look at that and you put it into, so this is what the world's going to look like when I'm in a healing crisis. This is the quality my perception's going to have is everything, and you know, I've done this sheet with thousands of people over many, many years, and at least 99.9% of the time, in their three early memories, people have written about what today, and these three early memories happened, you know, 50 years ago, what today they think is the problem in the world. And it is exactly the same pattern because perception is showing it to them. You know, when people hear about my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, they automatically go to, yeah, see, those people are doing it to me again. See, it's out there. They're doing it. See, yeah, your book is right. And I say, no, my book isn't right. It isn't they're doing it to you again. It's your, the construct in your mind is doing it to you again. And you think the construct's true about out there. And to recognize that until I show up as conscious, active, clear, crystal clear, present love, I'm just working a perceptual device called the mind that's filled with all kinds of corrupt data and repeating it wherever I look. The why is this happening to me again is the construct of my mind, not the event in the world. Now, oftentimes the event in the world will match, which just speaks about creatorship. But until I can take action based in my created human essence, which is love, I can't produce any result other than what my mind's construct is, because that's the energy that I'm empowering by unconsciously buying into it. That's what I'm strengthening. That's what I'm creating out of.
That's
and great. Life is designed to show up and cooperate with me.
Right.
That's exact. You know, it's like the creator custom designed a world that said, okay, guys, I'm going to set you free. You're a creator. I'll tell you what I'm going to do, though. I'm going to build in a fail-safe mechanism. If your creation goes off the rails and is killing you, I'm going to send you a whole procession of people for your whole life long that'll keep bringing that up for you until you finally stop and go, oh, the disturbance is in me. I need to bring the hidden part of this disturbance, which might be 10 generations old, forward in the presence of active love in order to dissolve it, in order for it to be forgiven. And now that I'm freed of it, I can lend my creative essence to something else. Otherwise, if something takes over millions of minds with a fraud and a lie, millions of minds collectively will produce the fraud and the lie, and they'll all believe that it's outside of them. And it is, but it's only outside of them because they're participators in it. And when they cut the energetic string, and allow a direct relationship, direct access, which is the most painful thing you can imagine. I mean, you go back, one of the things Jeannie and I have been watching in the evenings and doing a lot of breathing with is there's a series on Amazon Prime called, one was Valhalla, Entering Valhalla, I think was the name of it, but The Vikings. And to sit and breathe and to watch what a group of people have done in the past that is like beyond, you know, like we actually, you and I today, pretty much live in a pretty nice world relative to the way things have been in history. But I watch this and I watch how unconscionably vicious these people were and what they would do to each other. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And each piece that comes up in me that's disturbed is another piece of work I get to do. And another piece of work I get to do. Because, of course, when I look at that television set, you know, I've got a belief that was trained into me as a kid that I have eyes and I see what's happening out there. But I don't. I can only see what those energetic patterns that come through that screen and through that little plastic cone resonate in me. And the disturbance that I experience over it is in me. And when I realize that that's driven by a goal, and I collapse that goal, I can go to the very core root experience. And maybe, you know, maybe the reason why I look at this behavior that happened in this film last night was just like, oh, my God, I can't believe that. And I can feel, you know, my throat lengthening and tightening as I say the words. Maybe that was in my genes. Maybe that was an ancestor of mine that's inside of me in that darkness that I'm being invited to clean up.
Nonetheless, this will still be important to you, right? It will be important
to
you, even if you clean up. This situation that you're talking about will still be abhorrent to you even after you clean up, will it not?
It will be abhorrent. Yeah, my take would be that it would be unacceptable, but it would not be disturbing. That I would maintain connectedness to the active presence of love in me and go, wow, how could anybody do such a thing? But my breath would remain calm and connected and open. And my perception would carry no pain because there's no genetically coiled energy of pain from being the person that received the blow from that axe that was swung into that guy's head. Depicted from 800,000 years ago. But when one goes into denial, when one thinks or speaks as though something outside of them is the cause of what's moving inside of them, they literally take an energy. If you imagine, you know, it's like a coil spring in a car. They take that energy that's in full expression, the spring's extended, and by holding the breath and the act of denial, they take that coiled spring and they compress it down to a fraction of its size. And they lock it right into their genes. My take is that you and I and everybody on the planet has literally trillions of those coiled springs within us.
Yeah.
And the predominant resonant energy that's moving in me at any given moment is what's going to resonate or draw toward me those who are in resonance with that. And when they come close to me, even if they're committed to being totally loving, caring, sharing, wondrous, because of the energetic resonance in me, the mad banshee in them starts to move. And they do that very behavior that matches that coiled spring in me that was hidden away, you know, 200 generations ago, but is still in me now. And it comes up to full flower when that behavior happens, that resonates in me. And if I forget that I'm in the world that I see, then I go, yeah, boy, when you did that, that was really disturbing, what you did to me. And I've forgotten that the only, I mean, shy of somebody punching you in the nose, or as it happened in this video we watched last night, an axe into somebody's brain, shy of that axe striking, nothing can cause something to move in me unless it's in me. that's a huge piece of learning. And to recognize that what's moving in me is literally the denied, dissociated mind energy of a thousand generations of my bloodline. And am I willing to step in to my own trillions of bits of data and allow the most painful ones in my generations to be uncoiled in me and be so committed to hold to the state of active present love that those things are forgiven in me and my generations are freed of it, the world is freed of it, and I'm freed of it. I don't know if I shared with you or if you were on one of the radio shows where I shared that back, several months ago, I don't know, 8-10 months ago now, I was doing a still point session, had my eyes closed, and I had the inclination to point my eyes downward. And when I pointed my eyes downward closed, what I was shown, what I saw, was just a vast, vast, bigger expanse of darkness than I can fathom, and specks of light that were more than I could even consider being able to count. And what I was shown in that moment was that these were my ancestors and the goodness they were lost in. And they asked me if I would take on those energies and help to process them out, those energies out for them. And I realized that's the point at which I started to get. So there are these literal compressed, coiled energies that are carried. Everything that's never been resolved in your generations or mine, and, you know, in 30 generations there are 1.6 billion people. In 40 generations we're up over a trillion ancestors. And just, you know, for me, there was like just this awesome piece of confirmation when I looked down and I saw that and got what it was and then got the request, will you take on these energies and process them? And I literally spoke out loud to my generation, said, yes, I will take that on. And usually my phone is off when I do a still point session, but my phone wasn't. And at literally the instant that I spoke those words to my ancestors, that I would facilitate, allow that energy to come through me to be processed, to be exposed to love and be processed, my phone rang. And my son, Michael J., was on the phone. And we'd never had any conversation. He's 42, 43. So for 43 years we've been hanging out, we've never had a conversation about ancestors. And I answered the phone in the middle of my breathing. I just said these words, and Michael J. said, Dad, I'm on Ancestry.com, and I need some information about our ancestors. Literally, to the second where I said that, it's like I didn't need any more confirmation than that to know that what I just happened was exactly accurate. And that got me to a new level of commitment of, yeah, I'm going to take everything on in me that can be, that is corrupt, that is generational, that is unlike the presence of love, and I'm going to do the best I can to open the space to allow those coiled springs in me to open and to stay connected to love, to process through them, rather than make pictures out of them of all kinds of things outside of me and believe that it's outside of me.
Yeah,
when the ancients said, you must forgive from your heart, that's what they were talking about, from your own unconscious. And we'll go ahead. The show's going to cut us off, Doug, and we can continue tomorrow if you want to, but it'll cut us off. But go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say I can hardly believe the show's over now, and we've gone through all this and haven't even hardly touched the surface of so much stuff. I'll try and call tomorrow. If I can't, then the day after. I'm traveling tomorrow.
Okay.
But thank you.
Be safe.
Awesome. Good hey, stuff. Lots more to go.
All right. Lots of love and blessings. Appreciate you, Doug. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. You too.
Thank you.